Okay, so Parshas Balak has no mitzvah. And now we're going to start Parshas Pinchas. Pinchas yesh ba sheish mitzvos aseh. Pinchas has no negative commandments and has only positive commandments. Mitzvah tough. Oh, we're in a nice round number. Mitzvah 400, only 213 to go. Mitzvahs dinei nachalos. The mitzvah of inheritance. How is one's estate divided according to the Torah? Shenitzavinu b'dinei nachalos, kelomar shemitzvah leinu lasos v'ladun b'inyan ha-nachala, kasher dona ha-Torah aleha. You're not supposed to have one's estate divided based on how you want to divide it. You should go by how God wants to divide it. Shenemar ish ki amusu veino lo v'havartem es nachaloso levito. So the background of the story is a famous story of Benos Tzlafchad, who they were five sisters and they had no other siblings in the family, and their father died. So they said, "Hey, why shouldn't we inherit it? We should inherit our father's portion in Eretz Yisrael." So Moshe Rabbeinu, first time, he just said that I don't know the answer to that, so I'm going to have to go to God. So Moshe Rabbeinu went to God and asked the Shaila. And God said, they're correct, that if there are no sons, then the inheritance should be given to the daughters. So
is this the only time that Moshe was known to have actually asked the Shaila?
Pesach Sheni, and also when they weren't sure how to execute someone who was Michal Shabbos.
Oh, okay, right.
So so God said you should divide the inheritance among the daughters. So he says that the idea is that if a person dies and has no son, so you give the inheritance to the daughters, and if he has no daughters, then you give it to his father, and then et cetera. Uvasofa parsha, so there the Torah tells you the exact way that an estate is to be divided according to the Torah. So the first thing we notice over here, again, the Sefer Chanukah will go into more detail about what exactly the order is of inheritance, but the one thing that really causes issues nowadays with people expecting different from what the Torah prescribes is that the Torah says that one's primary heirs are the sons. So their daughters only inherit if there are no sons. So, for example, six daughters and three sons. So according to the Torah, if he has no halachic will, when he dies at Me'av Esrim and more, so his estate will be divided into three parts, even though he has nine children. His estate will be divided into three parts, and the third of the estate will be given to each of the sons.
Wait, what about
the
Bechor?
He doesn't have his first child is a girl, okay. So he doesn't have a Bechor.
So the oldest son doesn't count actually.
No, it's only if it's the first child. If you had a Bechor, then the estate would be divided, and they were three sons, then the estate would be divided into four parts, and the Bechor would get two, and each of the other sons would get two parts. Besofa parsha, one part each. Besofa parsha, v'haysa livnei Yisrael l'chukas mishpat, kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe, that it shall be for the children of Israel as an ordinance of law, as God commanded Moshe. Meaning, the way the Rambam writes, that normally there in the Torah there's some flexibility when it comes to what we call choshen mishpat issues, when it comes to monetary issues. So many times the normal custom either supplements or overrides or is used instead, I wouldn't say overrides, but is used instead of the Torah's rules. So sometimes, for example, if you're contracting a business deal and the Torah says it has to be done in a certain way, you have to make a kinyan hagbah, you have to lift up the object, if you can't move it, you have to make a kinyan sudar. But let's say in normal transaction in America, even among Jews, so how do you conclude a diamond transaction? Talk about something where Jews are very intimately involved.
Shake hands, mazel bracha.
You shake hands, you say mazel bracha. That means the transaction is concluded and neither party can now change the terms or go out, get out of the transaction. So that's recognized in halacha, as even though it doesn't say anywhere, Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, that if you say Mazel Bracha and shake hands, that concludes the transaction. So there is more flexibility when it comes to monetary things, but not regarding inheritance. The Rambam says, from the fact that the Torah says that it's a chukas mishpat, that it has to be this way, that means there is no mechanism to override the Torah's distribution of one's assets after death, per se. There might be ways to do it, but there's no way of saying that you want your inheritance to pass in a different way from the Torah. Okay?
You're talking about saying or giving something in writing?
Well, there's a big difference. Before you're dead, so you can give your property to whomever you want. Right? Again, it says in the Gemara that you're not supposed to do this, really, because it says, Ein ra chachamim no chayimenu, that if you give away so much of your property in your life that your heirs have almost nothing left, so technically that can be done, but the sages don't like it. So let's say, if you would give all your property away to a friend, and then your halachic heirs would only have $1,000 to split up between them, then that would be, again, that would be effective halachically, but it wouldn't be advisable halachically. But there's no way of saying after death, you want your assets to be transferred in a different way from what the Torah says, per se. Again, there are ways of making sure it happens, which we'll discuss later. Don't think that when I say that the mitzvah is that we should do as the Torah commands regarding the nachala, you shouldn't think that the mitzvah to have your heirs inherit means that you're not allowed to give anything away when you're alive in order to ensure that your heirs get it. That's not the mitzvah. So apparently there were some secular legal scholars in other nations who felt that a person should not give away their property before they die, because that'll prevent the heirs from getting what that's rightfully theirs. In other words, the heirs almost have a certain measure of control and say and ownership of the property before the person dies. So in halacha, we don't believe in that. The heirs have no control, no say, no right to the property per se before he dies, and a person would be allowed, again, not you, the only problem that it might be against the spirit of the law would be giving away a huge proportion of one's assets. But if you want to, before you die, you want to make very nice gifts to tzedakah, and you want your best friend has had his eye on your favorite chair for who knows how many years. So you want to give it to your best friend before you die, so your heirs shouldn't get it. That's okay. But the idea of giving away one's whole estate would be the problem. Or most of one's estate would be the problem.
If you have sons and daughters, can you give away everything you have to your daughters before your death?
That is the best way, in theory, in halacha.
That's what you want.
If you have, say, something that your sons wouldn't appreciate, say jewelry. You have a lot of jewelry, and maybe you have daughters-in-law who might appreciate it, but you really prefer to give it to your, or the most of it, to your blood daughters rather than have your daughters-in-law wear it. You should give some to daughters-in-law, so it's not to cause strife, but okay, whatever. But so the best way to do it, to ensure that it doesn't go as an inheritance, again, you can't predict when you're going to die most of the time, but the best way is to give as much of it as possible away during your lifetime. Then you don't have the problem of the inheritance.
So you can give all of your property to your daughters, even though you have sons?
In theory, you can while you're alive.
While you're alive.
You shouldn't do that, Lemaisa, to give all of it. But I'm saying if you have a certain class of object, like I said, like jewelry.
How about just money.
You can give money, sure. You can give money. Just you shouldn't
you
give.
You can divide your estate among your daughters and leave nothing.
But there's no estate there. You could divide. There's no estate yet. You didn't. You're still alive.
Okay, but whatever you own.
Yeah.
You have $1 million. You have some sons and you have some daughters. You don't want to leave anything for your sons.
You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't. As I said, you shouldn't.
Can you?
Yes, you can. Okay. If you give 500, if you have. You know, two daughters, and you give $500,000 to each, and that drains your bank account completely. So your sons will have nothing left to inherit, or they'll inherit some pieces of kitchenware. You know, yeah. Do you want to say something?
This farm.
No. I'm saying okay. The good thing, halachic will, which I assume will be speaking about.
Yeah.
You say you can't predict when you're going to die, but the halachic will says basically, okay, the time of your death minus 1 second is when this becomes okay. I mean that's.
That's a different thing. I would say no. What I'm saying is that, you know, it's hard to strike the balance if you want to give away all your jewelry, like my example, to your daughters. So it's hard to strike a balance between giving it away towards the end of your life because you still want to use it. If you're 40 years old and you're not expecting to die for another 80 years, so then you don't want to give your daughters your jewelry right away. You're still using it. But then if you're 105 and you're still clutching onto it and you don't give it away, so that's not good either. So when you're in your 90s, so you can start, maybe it doesn't have to be that extreme even, but when you're in your 90s, you can start giving more away because, you know, you have less time to use it. Yeah.
Somehow or other, just a little bit I know about, you know, like some of the laws of how you can make a Kenyan.
Yeah.
It seems to be the idea of saying, okay, I'm going to make this Kenyan at something time has not yet arrived. Like, you know, death minus 1 second.
That works.
That's okay? I mean, it's not like something like, okay, because you're bound to die. So that's not like something. You're not like
you could even do that in theory, actually, that you could give something to a daughter, if you have sons also. You give something to a daughter and say, I'm giving this to you as a gift, but the gift is only going to take effect 1 minute before I die. That you can do, but the problem is that that doesn't work to override the Torah's laws of inheritance. It only works for things that you own already.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you want to make a will, we'll get to more details about the wills later, but if you want to make a will that would be effective in halacha, you could, in theory, write a will saying, I give this property to this child 1 second before I die, and this property, this, da, 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 da. So that works for property that you actually own at the time that you write the will. But if you write the will when you're 50 and, you know, your stocks do fantastically well between the ages of 50 and 100, and you die at age 100, so those stocks that you acquired afterwards would not be included in that.
Right.
The reason why, well, we're going to talk about, not right now, but in a few minutes, about the better form of the halachic will ensures that you could distribute even the assets that you don't own yet to people after your death in a way that you want.
So you can't perform a Kenyan on something which doesn't exist. That's
correct.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Avahodianu shezechus ayorish kosher benichse morisho. That exactly at the moment of death, the property is transferred to the heirs. Each generation is one to the next generation without any gap in between. There's always, you know, it wouldn't work, obviously. There has to be an immediate connection between one generation and the next. Rabbi Hussein Zichron Lurocha Yikro Lizhus Achozak Shesh Lioris Venichsim Risha Beloshon Mishmush. The Chazal call it when the property is transferring from one generation to another, they call it groping. Meaning, as soon as you die, so your property grabs onto something else, and then the next person dies, immediately the property grabs onto someone else. There's no time where the property is held in
escrow.
Yeah, where the now somebody you died, and you're now you have something called an estate, which you could call it an estate, but the estate doesn't exist legally in halacha as an entity. And then we have to figure out with an executor of a will how to distribute the estate. That the exact moment of death, all your property is automatically distributed, whether you like it or not, in consonance with the dictates of the Torah. Yeah.
Okay. Supposing you owe money.
Yeah.
When you die.
Yeah.
Then does the lender have a lien on the on any of it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but that doesn't, in other words, but that simply means that the property gets transferred to your heirs, and the heirs
then are
obligated.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Exactly, yeah.
There's not an estate which has a lien, I don't know.
Correct, yeah. The inheritance grabs its way on to various things as it goes from generation to generation. It's as if they're touching. They go straight to each other without any a gap whatsoever. Then once it passes one, it goes to the next. Somebody says, my son should not inherit me. Obeni ploni lo yirashim echav. My son, I have three sons, Fred, George, and Jack. So Fred, George, and Jack are the three sons. So I want George and Jack to inherit, but I don't want Fred to inherit anything. Oh, biti tirasheni b'makom sheyesh ben. I always had a, you know, a better relationship with my daughter than my son, so I want my daughter to inherit, even though I have sons. V'chayotzi b'dvarim elu, ein b'dvarav mamish. Your words are ineffective. Shein b'yodor lakor dava dvar hakel, shamar shiyirash ayoresh morisho. God says that the inheritance works in a certain way, so you cannot undermine that. Yeah.
Wait, so then, how can you actually even make out a secular will? The secular will says, I give so much to, you know, the son, so much to the daughter, whatever it was.
You can't. What do you mean?
You can't.
You can write the words.
But in other words, afialacha, it doesn't have no effect. It's only, you know.
Correct. It only works in conjunction with the halachic will, which again, we'll, as soon as we finish the section, so we'll...
So let's say somebody left such a will, you're not obligated to follow it? Let's see.
If somebody leaves, a parent has no halachic will, but a parent leaves only a secular will. So, in theory, so let's say as follows. The parents said, there's a son and a daughter. So the parents write in the secular will, I want my estate divided equally between the son and the daughter. So the son, if the daughter goes to, you know, goes to the house and takes out all the stuff that she gets in the secular will, the son can go to a Beis Din and sue her and demand the restoration of all, and the Beis Din would, again, if no secular, no halachic will was executed as well, the Beis Din would obligate the daughter to give the son everything.
So it's important for all Jewish women to make sure their parents, you know, have made halachic wills.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm asking if the surviving children do not have an obligation to fulfill a parent's wishes, which is normally an obligation to fulfill.
The morally correct thing to do would be, in such a case, would be the son to read the secular will and say, "Hey, sis, you know, I see that our parents really wanted you to have half the estate, so I'm giving it to you, b'lev shalem, and you know, enjoy exactly what my parents wanted because I want to honor our parents' wishes." However, not everyone is so lifnim mishuras hadin. Everybody is willing to go with he has a right to exercise his halachic rights over the estate. Yeah.
In practice, I mean, I'm sure that there must have been cases, you know, where in fact, you know, secular wills were set aside by a Beis Din. You know, somebody cut you out.
Yeah, but the problem
said,
is,
I don't want to have anything. You know.
So. No. So then the problem is that such a ruling of a Beis Din, while halachically correct, could then, again, this is not allowed, but the daughter could then go to secular court and now sue the brother and say, no, the secular will, the legal will, says that I get half the estate. And now the court will overrule the ruling of the Beis Din, because the Beis Din, again, in the olden days, so the Jewish courts functioned independently, so this wasn't an option. But nowadays, although normally courts defer to Beis Din decisions, especially when you have a binding arbitration agreement, the courts reserve the right, if they feel that the Beis Din acted irrationally, to overrule them. So in such a situation, the sister is going to get half of the estate because the court ruled in her favor. The problem is that now, in the eyes of God, she's stealing. Mm-hmm. All this money is stolen.
Yeah.
So she's committing a major sin. I mean, going to secular court is also a major sin in itself. But even though she could end up with the money, it creates major problems.
Maybe she's not stealing. Maybe her parents who have died have just not observed the Torah rule as far as inheritance is.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's what is the the Torah, the laws of the Torah divide the estate according to the Torah. So if the brother who is halachically entitled to all the money does not willingly give half the money to the sister in accordance with the parents' wishes, then she's stealing it. It doesn't matter what the Goyisha courts say. That's irrelevant in our religious eyes. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because there was one case, I think there was an article in Hakira even.
Oh, yeah, right. I think that.
There was an odd case where a man had two daughters and a son. So he wrote a halachic will, which would have entitled each of his children to an equal share in the estate. But the problem was, he tried to write a halachic will, but he did something wrong. There was something, I forget exactly what it was, but there was something technically a little bit wrong with the halachic will. So therefore, according to the absolute din, it should be ineffective. And that's actually what happened after this man died. So the son said, went to Beis Din and said, "No, I'm suing my sisters because I'm entitled to everything. This halachic will is invalid, so the Torah rule should be implemented here, and I should get the entire estate." So that case is a little funny. I have to look up the article again. But the Beis Din ended up basically paskening. They said to the brother, "You're a jerk. Get out of here. We're awarding the estate to..." They combined a lot of different factors. A lot of tserufim in this case, where they said that even though the halachic will was not executed exactly correctly, they were still going to divide the estate in accordance with the parents' wishes, because there's also something called mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, that you're supposed to...
That's why I was asking.
Yeah, you're supposed to fulfill the wishes of the dead, but again, that's a moral, ethical, pseudo-halachic obligation, which would not stand in the face of somebody claiming their absolute halachic right to the property.
Right. Or somebody claiming, like, "I want to be cremated."
Of course, sure. So actually, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, which is that Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis really applies when the deceased put the property in the hands of a trustee to then divide the property. But here, there's no trustee. There's a problem with the will. It goes straight from the parent to the child. So then you have a problem. That's also a problem. So according to the halacha, a wife does not inherit her husband. Only the husband inherits the wife, which is Avraham will talk about in a minute. But you have a problem with that as well, because most of the time when a man dies, so he wants his wife to inherit everything before the children, because there's a different social structure nowadays. That nowadays it could be, the mother might still use the money to assist and support the children, whereas in the older days it was the opposite. So in such a situation... So there has to be a provision, again, in a halachic will, for the estate to pass first to the wife and then to the children. So again, the technical halacha is that when a man dies, so his wife gets basic support of food, clothing, basic medical treatment from the husband's estate until one of two things happens. Either she gets remarried, in which case her support from the husband's estate stops, or number two, she decides to collect her ksuba. That she wants it. Her wants this in a lump sum instead of in the support in perpetuity until she gets remarried. Then she's allowed to do that. But she does not per se inherit the husband's estate. Yeah.
How much is ksuba worth nowadays, roughly?
There are different estimates. It's a complicated sugya, but it's probably only a few thousand dollars. which is a little bit funny because obviously any woman in such a situation would take the support in perpetuity rather than a few thousand dollars. It could be that it was worth relatively more. Also, you have to remember that nowadays there was a takana that all ksubas in Ashkenazi communities, and Sephardi communities not, but in Ashkenazi communities, all ksubas are the same. That in the times of the Gemara, and still in Sephardi communities nowadays, a man used to show off how rich he was by adding on a lot of money to his wife's ksuba. So in Sephardi communities now, so you have the ksuba actually written in dollars. So we still Ashkenazim, since all the ksubas are the same for everyone, we use zkukim, which are Polish coins.
Okay.
Or in the German communities, they use a different measurement of pounds of silver. Okay, whatever. But all the ksubas for all women are the same, so we shouldn't embarrass those who can't afford to give more of a tosefes ksuba of adding on to a ksuba. So if you look in a Sephardi ksuba, you know, if you go to a wedding on Avenue S in Brooklyn or in Deal, so you read the ksuba, it's written in dollars. So he said in the chassan added on as a tosefes ksuba, depending how rich he is, $50,000, $100,000, $500,000, whatever it is. So then she might want the lump sum rather than getting the support in perpetuity. But in any event, I think Rabbi Willig writes that it's a little bit of a shaila nowadays because it could be that women actually, it's not a matter of inheritance, but they actually are co-owners of the property. Uh-huh. That the classically in halacha, what we say, kol mashe kansa isha kanabayla, that everything that a woman acquires becomes basically her husband's. That's in exchange for the fact that the husband is supposed to provide the wife with all the support. So she anything. So again, they're talking about, you know, little things that if she wanted to, she finds a lost object or something and she picks it up. So it really becomes her husband's because he has a right to because of all the support that he's giving her. But here, since the money nowadays in marriages is shared much more. Is in terms of a co-ownership, so it could be that when the husband dies, that it's not a matter of inheritance at all. But since the wife already owns the property, so it's not really talking about inheritance.
Yeah, because usually the bank account's a joint, so it's two co-owners, right?
But still, in halacha, you could argue kol mashekan seishakan abayla. But it could be that the husband has in mind that he wants the wife to actually have an ownership in the property. So therefore, it wouldn't even have to have anything to do with inheritance per se, but rather that she already owns it. Okay, vafal pi shamarnu shenechasav biyado lechol cheftzav, that you could do whatever you want with your property while you're alive. Hoinin hulomar sheyachol haadam litneim lechol mi sheyirtze velasos vem kol cheftzaz nafsho vafil abdam. You could do whatever you want. You could give your property to whomever, and you could even destroy it. Again, you might be getting into issues of bal tashchis. They're not supposed to wantonly destroy a property, but if you have a reason to destroy it, you're allowed to do that. So, b'chol lashon, any way you want to dispose of your property, you may, in any language of a gift or whatever, chutz mizeh shel yerusha. You just can't say, while you're alive, I give this to someone as an inheritance. If you say, I give it to my next door neighbor as an inheritance, that's no good. It's against what God wants. So your person doesn't have the authority to say you shouldn't inherit it. That's what the Mishnah says in Perek Yesh Nochlin and Bava Basar, which talks about inheritance. You say that this son should not inherit with the rest of his brothers. Lo amar klum, he said nothing. That you made it a stipulation that goes against what it says in the Torah. We're towards the beginning of Mitzvah Tov. V'chein ha'omer ish ploni yirsheni b'mokom sheyesh bas. Let's say you have only daughters, and you say, you know, I want someone else to yarshin me and not the daughter. It's not allowed. It's ineffective, rather. But if I have a son, I want my daughter to inherit me. So that also doesn't work. That he made a stipulation that goes against what it says in the Torah. So here is something that is a little bit of a kicker. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer im Omar al Misha Roy le Yorsho Dvariv Kayomim. You can, in theory, give all your property to one son. Let's say you have sons and daughters, or only sons. You can give all your property to one son because he's a halacha ger. Or if you have only daughters, you can pick one daughter and say, I want her to inherit everything because that's she's a halacha ger. Perushim amar ben abanim, bas ben abanos, she yirasheni. Perushimam al ben ben abanim al bas ben abanu shirashenu echad mehem levado dvarim dvarav kayamim. So if you want just one of the halachic heirs to inherit, that works. Bedarish leib gemara midichsi vayab biyom hanchilo as banav. It says by the bechor, it shall be in the day that he gives inheritance to his children. Shatora nasna rishus laav lahanchil mishiyirtsa min haroyin lirash. You could do it for again. You could change the inheritance of somebody who's a halacha ger. Benifzik Hashem halacha bozek Rabbi Yochanan legabi pshuten, aval lo legabi bechor. This doesn't work for a bechor, but it works for the rest of the sons. Shein koach ba'av la'akor Yerusha min ha-bechor b'inyanza. You cannot give a single portion to the bechor, but you can, for example, if you have you don't have a bechor. So your first, you have a son first, but he was born by a C-section. You have a daughter first, and then you have 10 sons. So you're going to have a lot of sons, but you're not going to have a bechor. So you could say that you want just Fred to inherit you and not any of your other sons. Again, maybe not a good idea, but halachically, that would work. V'yod amrusham ha-mechalik nechasav, riba le'echad umiyed le'echad, v'ishva lehenes ha-bechor, dvarav kayomim. V'imamar mishum yirusha lo amar klum. If you're just handing out your property, and even if you don't give the bechor a double portion, then it's okay. But if you say, I mean, it works. But if you say that it should be an inheritance, then it doesn't work. But if you say that you're giving it as a gift at any point in the document or in the statement that you're making, then it works. Well, if that even though it's ineffective, if you use a language of Yerusha, of inheritance, and you say that my next-door neighbor should inherit me instead of my son, so you have, even though it's ineffective, you're mevatel asei. You've neglected to perform a mitzvah of the Torah because you attempted to violate the prohibition. Yeah.
So in other words, according to what he says, it seems to him, is that to fill out right a secular will is in fact wrong. You're being vatal for the mitzvah, say.
Well, if you combine it with a halachic will, so it should be fine because you're clearly having the secular will be secondary to the halachic will.
Even though the secular will talks about an estate.
I have to look at the exact language. Okay. I mean, we assume that's how everybody does it, that you fill out a secular will and you fill out a halachic will.
Right.
So the halachic will on its own, you know, is not going to be effective unless you have a halachic will. So therefore, you know you're not really attempting to divide your estate based on the secular will.
Well, okay, actually what you're doing is you're saying, as I understand this, that 1 second before I die, I'm going to give away all of my possessions according to what it says in the secular will, so that when you actually die, you have nothing in your estate. However, the secular law doesn't...
Works... Again, only for the property that you owned at the time of writing the secular will. The way to get around that is the better version of the halachic will is as follows. It's based on a concept called Ashtar Chatzi Zachar. That there was a custom in many communities in Europe that you gave a daughter half the portion of a son. So how did that work? Why would you do that? First of all, that might be a problem because the Torah says was to give the son. So if you try to circumvent that, maybe that's no good. So in fact, the Gemara says in Ksuvis that you're allowed to give extra money to your daughter even though it detracts from the inheritance of your sons in order to improve her marriage prospects. So what they used to do, that the fathers used to do at the instead of actually giving the daughter a large dowry, so this was in place of a dowry, or maybe in addition to a dowry, they used to write a document at the wedding which states as follows. I am hereby indebting myself to my daughter, to this daughter who's getting married. I hereby declare that I owe her $100 million. You're allowed to do that. If your admission can create a debt to someone. If I say, I owe I owe Melchior 50 cents, so now I don't mean it, but if I said that in a way where I really meant it, even if he'd never lent me 50 cents, I created a debt for 50 cents to Melchior. So that's the way it works. So basically what you say is I indebting myself $100 million to my daughter. However, this is how you're going to get out of the debt. If my heirs give her half a portion of a son in the estate, then I cancel my debt. I don't want the debt to be in effect. So therefore, conditional, exactly. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it will now be in the son's best interest to give her a half portion of the estate, because otherwise they have to pay her $100 million. Mm-hmm. So that's the way a halachic will works nowadays. Because this way also, you have the property that comes into his possession after the writing of this document can be included in the what you're going to give the daughter. So that's the way a contemporary halachic will works. A couple, or a person, whatever, draws up a secular will with a lawyer and says, I want my estate to be divided in this way. But maybe Taki, don't use the Lashon of Yerusha. Maybe you say, I divide the estate. Maybe that's too close to Yerusha. It's a good question. But I want my estate to be divided in such and such a way. And then you write an additional document, which is called the Halachic Will, which is saying, I owe anyone, it doesn't matter who it is really, I owe anyone $100 million. Mm-hmm. However, I cancel my debt if my heirs divide the estate in accordance with what is dictated in the secular will. So that's the way you do a halachic will nowadays. Okay? Yeah? So what do you mean? You mean that people should actually divide their estates according to what it says in the Torah?
Secondary...
You have a problem, which is that in most families nowadays, if that were to happen, it would cause a lot of strife. So the Maisa, the poskim say.
I'm saying any kind of.
No.
Dina de Malchusa Dina, Zotmes is Hirsch. Dina de Malchusa Dina. The Rashba writes explicitly in the Tshuva, Dina de Malchusa Dina does not apply to internal matters between Jews.
Good.
Dina de Malchusa Dina means that if you're living in a country and the country says, no, you have to pay taxes, so you have to pay taxes. The country says, this is the speed limit, so you have to observe the speed limit. Okay, the minhag maybe is not to observe the speed limit so exactly, but you can't go way over the speed limit. Dina de Malchusa Dina does not mean that when you have a secular law that overrides the law of the Torah, even in a monetary matter, where there is some more flexibility in other areas, then we go according to the secular law. This absolutely, Dina de Malchusa Dina does absolutely not apply to wills, which is the source of the problem. So, you're right, but what the halachic will is designed to prevent. Look, if all your kids are complete tzaddikim and they don't care about money, and they're totally willing, b'lev shalem, to divide the estate as their parents say, then you don't need a halachic will, technically. However, when it comes to money, not everybody is so giving all the time. So that's why So the point is that in most families, unfortunately, there would be strife, and there would be, there would be people who are not halachic heirs, who are not entitled to the money, who would take the money anyway. So the point of the halachic will is to save them from the prohibition of gezel, of stealing, in accordance with the what?
Our kolos also, right? Yeah.
If they are litigating in the secular courts, that's even worse.
So this is part of what you say, that the positive virtue of the law, well, it's aroma in a certain respect, which is to say that that you are preventing some of your children from doing terrible errors.
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly. And it just it gets rid of the strife. They don't even have to think about it. Should I give some of to my sister? Is it really right? No, I'm the halachic heir. Maybe I should get it. It just avoids all these discussions. So there, many poskim say that nevertheless, since it does appear to be circumventing the laws of the Torah, even though it's halachically it works. It's it will remove all the prohibitions. Nevertheless, if possible and without causing strife, a small portion of the estate should be divided in accordance with the Torah's obligations. So you leave over from your secular will a token amount. Say you have let's say you have 9 kids. How does this work? And whatever you leave over $1,000, and you distribute the $1,000 only between the sons, or you give a double portion to the Bechor, or you whatever it is. So there you go. That's the halachic will. Everyone should have a halachic will if it's relevant. For Mrs. Hirsch, it's not relevant, right?
Have sons, so you
don't have. So Mrs. Hirsch has 2 daughters. So according to secular law and according to the Torah, with no halachic will, so her entire estate is going to be divided between the 2 daughters evenly. Even though one's older, there's no bechor when it comes to girls. So
can you specify how they need to spend that money?
What do you mean?
In other words, whatever's left over. Can I specify that they should spend it a certain way, or that they should divide it a certain way?
Well, they're going to divide it equally.
They're inheriting my property.
Right.
But can I specify how I want them to spend my property?
No.
No.
You could do what's called. Is also recommended that there is a ethical will, that we know that many great rabbanim and regular people also. In addition to a will discussing the division of property, they had a ethical will discussing how they wanted their descendants to behave. So, for example, we know Tzavos Reb Yehuda Chosid is the most famous one.
I thought that was believed to be a forgery.
Tzavos Reb Yehuda Chosid?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, so.
No, I don't think so.
All right, I'll show you.
Tzavos Reb Yehuda Chosid?
Yeah.
So there's a Shaila. So some people say, well, he was so great that maybe we should all follow it. But the simple, according to most authorities, technically only his descendants, so he really intended for it to be followed. But hasn't there things like that a man is not allowed to marry a woman who has the same name as his mother? Doesn't say that anywhere in the Gemara, but okay. Says that two mechutanim shouldn't have the same name. Yeah,
okay. Those are some very strange superstitions. Yeah,
you shouldn't cut your hair on Rosh Chodesh. It has interesting things in there.
He made it up from the
That was his ethical will. That's how he wanted his descendants to behave.
It
also so not everybody observed this. Also says in Tzavos Reb Yehuda Chosid that 2 brothers should not marry 2 sisters. What do you mean? It's all over in the Gemara everywhere. It says that even in recent generations, Reb Breuer did this. That Reb Breuer and his brother were married to 2 sisters. Mm-hmm. So they didn't observe this part of Tzavos Reb Yehuda Chosid.
Let's go back to her question.
Yeah. Her question,
I know someone whose mother requested the Sefer Torah written for her for the money that she left. So basically...
I mean, she, the way to...
I mean, she did it, but she didn't really have to.
I mean, there is this more... maybe it's not a technical halachic interpretation, but there is this general idea of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ameis.
But not from the point of view.
But it should be an absolute requirement. If you really want a Sefer Torah written in your memory, then the way to do it is...
While you're alive.
Well, first of all, do it while you're alive. It's
she thought she needed money.
An adopted child is not a halachic heir, technically. So you have to write a halachic will. You would say that, so technically, if somebody adopts a child, so then you would follow the other order of the Yerusha. So normally, if one has no biological children, so the next person who gets the Yerusha is one's father, will be the next person in line. So, and if the father is deceased already, so then it would go to the father's sons. So then, but you don't want that to happen. So you would have to write a halachic will. Otherwise, technically, again, I don't think this would really happen. But technically, the adopted child's uncles could take him to Bezdin and say, hey, we want your adoptive parents' estate. Yeah, but that's why you gotta get out of this with a halachic will. Where were we? Okay. The Ode. Again, we have ways out of it to ensure harmony in families, and again, we don't think that is actually always observed the way it says in the Torah. Okay, the Ode Amru Sham. Hamechalig nechasav. We did. Sorry. Ufiyah dome. Afal pishein mamish b'divrei omer loshni rusha ma'isav neklum b'gavarshim asnisin b'tzavosu b'vatum b'tzavosu da. Mikbishum da'avra harmana demalka. That he violated by saying you want someone else to inherit that's not a halachic heir. You violate what God wants. So therefore, that's bad, even though it's ineffective. V'chein im. Shema achar moso kiemu bezdin as dvarav ela yishleim gamken avon bitul mitzvah zeim zem milvad onish lav delo sata mishpat. So it's that not only will the sin affect the bequeather, but it will affect also a bezdin that enforces this request. Obviously, not very learned bezdin will be violating it as well as lo sata mishpat. You can't pervert judgment against what it says in the Torah. Ulefi hanira midivrei haRambam zal that what the Rambam writes shikol ikar azara einana rak ala bezdin shadanu beinyan anachalakein. So the Rambam writes that no, it doesn't go by the individual who attempted to bequeath his property not in accordance with the Torah. Vezeu l'shono shekosavu mitzvah ladun bedin anachala, meaning that the bezdin has a mitzvah to judge in accordance with the laws of the nachala. And I'm going to explain as well in the mitzvah of Hafaras Nedarim. So we should just add on that there is a unique shita of Rav Moshe Feinstein that you might come across if they're in the literature about wills, where Rav Moshe Feinstein essentially says that a secular will is valid in halacha because it's a funny svara that since everybody knows that that this will is enforceable in secular law and this is the way it's going to be whether they like it or not, so the fact that a person writes a secular will, it's as if like making a kinyan on the property from starting from the time of life. So truth is,
so you don't need a halachic will, in other words.
According to him, you don't need a halachic will, but even though obviously it was very great, and in terms of the 20th century American poskim, pretty much the leader, Lemaisa, basically everyone else, without exception, completely disagrees with him and says that doesn't work because we know in the Torah, in other words, there's no mechanism for doing that. As soon as a person dies, the estate is transferred. It's not like you now have the money in an estate, and then you go by, everybody knows that it's going to be distributed in a certain way, so it's like a kinyan. The whole mechanism just doesn't make sense halachically, and they bring proofs from the Gemara, not like this. So again, that's pretty much an absolute lone opinion amongst the poskim, and according to 99.9% of poskim, then in order for one's estate to be distributed in a permissible fashion, according to one's desires, one would be required to write a halachic will. And I certainly encourage, I gave a drush about this once, that except for people, lucky people like Mrs. Hirsch, who don't, this is not relevant, they don't have to bother with it. For people for whom it is relevant, absolutely one should be writing a halachic will. Yeah?
Can you do it like if you want to give it to the doctor or whatever? I mean, the people that either don't have children or they have children, they'd rather give it to the tzedakah than to their kids. Is there any way halachically to do that?
Yeah, you can make that part of the will, and then that would be part of the halachic will. If they give it to the charity, so then the debt of $100 million will be nullified.
Hmm. Who has to pay it back? Oh, the kids have to. Kids have to.
Right. So you were right. You would basically say as follows: I owe a debt of $100 million to my next door neighbor, but I cancel the debt if my kids, when dividing my assets, give this charity $10,000. So that's obviously a much better deal. But rather give the charity $100,000, they give the next door neighbor $100 million.
Is there any sense of proportion? I mean, what if you want to give, theoretically, all of your money to the tzedakah? So you give a dollar to each one of the kids?
A dollar? So that's not recommended. Can you do that? Is it possible to do that? Yes, but one, there's a whole discussion amongst the poskim as to how much of one's estate one should give to charity. Some say not more than a third. Some say you could give up to half. Some say that if you're an ultra billionaire and you leave each of your kids $500 million and you still have the $3 billion to give to tzedakah, then you could give basically unlimited to tzedakah as long as you provide properly for your kids. So there's some discussion about that.
So like strange families who really don't want to give the kids anything. Yeah. They'd rather give it all to tzedakah.
Well, the best is to do it in your lifetime. That's the best. But again, you might need the money, but as much as you can afford to give during your lifetime, you should give during your lifetime. That avoids all these problems.